This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
I know
wow.
You're on there.
Unbelievable happenings to in Toronto, CNN.
Something I want you to do.
What
I said there's something I want you to do. Hello.
We're on the air here. Are you having a problem or something?
Yes, I'm having a problem. I can hear Miss Betty, my secretary, but I can't. She don't hear me.
Oh, you want to? You actually want to talk to somebody on that phone?
What do you think I've been dialing for? Of course I want to talk to her. Hello.
Why don't you try
can
this?
Can you hear this?
You want to talk to somebody, you have to put this inside the telephone. You want to... Never ceases to amaze me, the intelligence of Bobby the Brain Heenan. Look at that. You're good.
Someone's been messing with my phone here now.
Unbelievable.
This is the cheapest phone I've ever seen in my life.
Unreal.
Now, wait a minute. Can I get a decent phone here? Is that a lot to ask?
Yes,
hello. Hello. Will somebody give me a decent phone? That's all I ask. Now I've got to put this thing together.
The Russo brothers' fantastic victory over the Dream Team. The
Don't
telephone with a big victory over Bobby the Brain Heenan. Plenty more. Plenty more still to come this week, rest of fans.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this special tribute episode of Greetings from Allentown. I'm your host, Peter Winson. And today, we'll be celebrating the career of the late Bobby the Brain Heenan, who passed away on Sunday at the age of 72 after a lengthy battle with cancer that dated all the way to the year 2000. And it was something that was still, it hit me in such a kind of visceral way, even though his battle with cancer has been very public and the various health problems he's had over the years, but it still hit me like a ton of bricks because he had beaten it for so long, and obviously we're all going to go at some point. When someone who is a part of your youth passes away, even if you didn't know them, it's like a celebrity death. You can still sometimes feel it in really kind of odd ways, and you feel this tinge of sadness that you really shouldn't have to explain to somebody, because I always say that mourning a death, there's no handbook for that, so you can't really tell anybody how to mourn the death of somebody, whether they know them or not. But with Bobby the Brain Heenan, one of the greatest personalities in the history of professional wrestling. He has such a catalog of quips and all that, that he should be celebrated to the max. I mean, earlier today, after I found out, as I record this, I spent at least an hour and 20 minutes just watching Heenan clips on YouTube. And I still am craving more of it. I'm like, oh, I want to watch more. But what happened was the recommended videos was pulling up all the stuff that I had watched before. So I'm going to have to dig a little deeper for some new things to look at and to listen to. Because the Brain was just so funny. And as a kid, watching him was a little unusual because, you know, and see things as good guys and bad guys. And of course, Heenan was the ultimate heel manager in wrestling. You stick anybody with him, instant credibility for that guy. And I'll get into that a little bit more later when I talk about his wheelings and dealings. What I want to do with this show here today, and usually I'll review a television show and I'll go from the start of the show to the end of the show and I'll provide context to everything that happened in a particular episode of like Superstars or whatever. I just want to touch upon various points in the Brain's career, mainly focusing on his WWF days, because I don't have as much context that I can really share for his time in the AWA. I did talk about it briefly in episode 9 when he made his departure from the AWA to the WWF, a departure which was unusual compared with the other people who jumped in that Heenan gave proper notice and then worked out that notice, unlike others who took more money in order to leave Vern Gagne high and dry. So Heenan clearly was a man of honor in that way. Now, watching as a kid, you don't know any of this. So here's this guy on television, as I'm watching in 1989, the year in which I was most deeply embedded, because when you're 10 years old, you don't have a job, you don't have responsibilities, there's really nothing else, you know, other than, in my day, a Nintendo, video games, and all that, and then wrestling, Monday night, Saturday morning, all that. And here is Bobby Heenan, who is dominating the scene in 1989. He gets his own show on the USA Network, 30 minutes at the end of primetime wrestling. He's making these quips with Monsoon. He's feuding with Roddy Piper. And the whole time, he is quite hilarious. And I wanted to laugh at his jokes, but I felt almost a sense of obligation to not laugh at the bad guy's jokes because, well, wouldn't that make me a bad person? Because I didn't quite understand everything that went into this. But to this day, we thank God for YouTube and for the network and for all that so that we have access to this footage to just celebrate what an incredible comedian this guy was. If he wasn't in professional wrestling, I could absolutely see him as the kooky neighbor character on any sitcom. Can't you picture Bobby Heenan as Kramer from Seinfeld? Sure, he would play the role a little bit differently. He would probably bump as often as Kramer did, but he would be just as hilarious. And also, you wouldn't have had that little comedy club scandal from 2006 with the racial slurs and all that. I'm intending this show to be a tribute to the life and career of Bobby the Brain Heenan, the greatest manager of all time. And I just have some bullet points, some things in his career that I just kind of want to walk through and revisit. And there'll be plenty of clips played throughout the show and commentary as there is in all the other episodes of Greetings from Allentown. So why don't we just jump right in?
How about this?
What is that?
This happens to be the real championship belt.
That's not Hogan's belt, Brain. I know the champ's belt when I see it.
You're right. Comparing this belt to Hulk Hogan's belt would be like comparing ice cream to horse manure. Comparing the men that wear these belts would also be like comparing ice cream to horse manure. You see, the man that owns this belt is right now under contract to another organization. But in the very near future, he might be coming to the World Wrestling Federation. The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name. This man not only has challenged Hogan on numerous occasions, unanswered, may I add. But if you want to compare him, fine. Then let's compare Hulk Hogan to Ric Flair. Oh!
Just a heads up here that I'm not going to be going in any sort of real chronological order. I just sort of wrote bullet points of random things that I wanted to talk about from his career. And that clip is from the August 11th, 1991 episode of Wrestling Challenge, a show which I may cover someday just so I could talk about this all over again. Who knows? Maybe this will be enough there. You get the closing segment, as they usually would do in front of the big green screen. This show was from Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and they're standing in front of the green screen, and it is Gorilla, the Brain, and Jim the Anvil Neidhart during that unfortunate period where the dynamic between the Gorilla and the Brain was interrupted by an anvil being dropped on it, which they rode out for a few more months before Anvil became a wrestler again. So they're wrapping it up, and it seems like any other week, you know, here, Wrestling Challenge is the last show from that taping, as a matter of fact. You're leading up to SummerSlam, so, you know, what are you going to get? All of a sudden, Bobby whips out the NWA World Heavyweight title, which was also the WCW World Heavyweight title, since the two were pretty much synonymous with each other up until around mid-1991, when they had broken apart from each other. Of course, they had dropped the NWA name at the end of 1990, just before Starrcade, but he was the recognized champion of WCW and the NWA. Ric Flair was. And there wasn't two different belts or anything. And watching it at that time, I remember sitting there and I knowing exactly what was going on. And this is, now I just spent in the opening segment talking about how I was not a sophisticated wrestling fan and this and that kind of stuff. I knew exactly what the WCW or NWA World Heavyweight title looked like. I bought the Apter mags every single month at the grocery store, in downtown, wherever. And like, to see that on WWF television and knowing that their thing was to never mention anything else in the world. The WWF was completely within its own bubble. So to acknowledge the other world champion, even though the angle might not have played out to everybody's liking, well, with Piper spitting on the belt on the funeral parlor segment a couple of weeks after this, there are some issues there. But to have Heenan out there holding up that belt, and he would do this time and again while waiting out the Ric Flair non-compete clause or whatever it was that he had to wait out for a few more weeks before he would come in. And that would not be until mid-September on Primetime Wrestling. And there, sure enough, Bobby is there as well, carrying the belt, preparing everybody for the arrival of Ric Flair, who cuts a promo on Hulk Hogan, Roddy Piper, and even somebody in the audience during that. And Ric Flair was to be managed by Bobby Heenan, an arrangement that did not last particularly long, as the Brain pointed out in his Hall of Fame speech, where he suggested that managing Ric Flair was like hanging out with Larry Flint. Of course, he is the infamous publisher of Hustler magazine, which I suppose people probably would know him better now from the movie The People versus Larry Flint that came out in around the mid to late 1990s with Woody Harrelson. So the Brain, he had retired from managing and really didn't want to take bumps anymore and just didn't want to be at ringside, wanted to become a broadcast journalist, which, by the way, I majored in broadcast journalism at Boston University. And every time I would have to say broadcast journalist or broadcast journalism, I would think of Bobby Heenan and the way he would say that. So if somebody said, what do you want to be when you grow up? I want to be Bobby the Brain Heenan. I want to be a broadcast journalist. So he took a step from that. He was going to manage Flair, and that didn't work out. But that led to Mr. Perfect, who had recently been injured, joining the group as the executive consultant. And Heenan was shifted over to the financial advisor role, which was interesting because I don't know if he had a Series 7 license or anything like that. I guess they were just taking his word for it. Or maybe Flair had heard about how Heenan had ripped off Ted DiBiase a few times. I'll get to that when I get to the section on the wheelings and dealings of Bobby the Brain Heenan, of which there was many, many things during his WWF tenure. So his elevation and just showing the NWA belt on WWF television was amazing. And he made it so that it was perfectly clear that Ric Flair was a big deal to anybody who was not aware of the outside world of wrestling, that if Vince McMahon had sheltered them from WCW or anything else in the world but the sports entertainment package coming out of Stamford, Connecticut. And that's exactly the kind of credibility that Bobby Heenan would bring to any angle and storyline.
I want to make a statement here. I've taken my glasses off. I realize he's going to be no violence now. He's content with getting away with what he got away with. But you know, I was thinking something. Maybe I acted a little too hastily. Maybe I talked to you like I shouldn't have talked to you. Maybe you didn't need somebody shoving you around talking to you like you were a piece of garbage. Maybe you needed a pat on the back.
That's how you treated everybody.
Well, some people react differently to a pat on the back than a kick in the can. Okay, I was wrong, maybe. I'm a big enough man.
You were wrong? You said it came out.
I was wrong.
It came out of your mouth. You
said I admit it on national television. I'm a human being. I made a mistake.
Well,
and since you're going to be here,
like I suggested,
and you keep
on
harping on me, fine. You go your way, I'll go mine. I was wrong. I apologize.
Oh, how about
drop
a handshake?
It at that.
Great.
You're asking for a lot now.
Well, it's an apology and a handshake. You two gentlemen, I think that it's only fitting.
Okay,
that
it's over then.
Oh, yeah.
I hope
it's
so.
Over.
Yes, sir.
I like to
for
see
good.
I like to
I'm
see
through with you. You're through with me.
Yes.
I made a mistake.
Sounds good to me.
Forget it.
Forget it.
Forget it.
Not very often. He apologizes.
Okay. Guaranteed. Forget it.
Okay.
Oh, what? Why are you doing that?
Well, nothing.
Why would you do that?
Bobby Heenan managed a lot of guys through the years. And we're talking as wide a range of people as you could possibly imagine. In the AWA, he managed Nick Bockwinkel, who among like a casual fan, it has to be criminally underrated because he was out of the AWA and the losers don't end up writing the long-term history. Somebody who really did not need a manager, but Heenan being there as part of the package enhanced everything. And on the other end of the spectrum, from that clip we just heard from Primetime Wrestling in 1989, yes, there was a brief period in which Bobby Heenan managed Steve Lombardi and christened him the Brooklyn Brawler shortly after that incident where Gorilla got taken out by a stool from Lombardi and Terry Taylor, the Red Rooster, had been body slammed onto a cabinet. Hopefully that didn't have the tape of Bret Hart versus Tom McGee in it so that they can release that on the next version of WWE Unreleased. Anyway, wide variety of guys that Heenan managed. And the way he would handle them, I almost look at him like a baseball general manager. He's wheeling and dealing constantly, shuffling guys in and out. And I always liked that Heenan would always correct the commentator who would refer to his group of wrestlers as a stable. A stable is for horses, Heenan once said. His is a family. And I like the use of the word family, whether it's the first family or the Heenan family for your heel stable. So let's just run down some of the guys that Heenan had. One that really kind of jumps out at me was the brief appearance of the Missing Link in 1985 WWF. And he was already up there in years, as I recall. And a trade. And not only do I miss managers in wrestling, which is a complete lost art, because Heyman isn't even really a manager because his guy isn't there half the time. Just when you would have multiple managers in a promotion and when they would interact with each other, and especially when they would make trades with each other. I loved when two managers would make a deal with each other just to kind of see how that would play out. And they went over this on the podcast Letters from Kayfabe in one of the episodes where they went over Bobby Heenan's wheelings and dealings. But I feel the need to revisit some of them here. And Missing Link, who was not there for very long, was traded to Jimmy Hart along with Adrian Adonis in exchange for King Kong Bundy. And I don't know if cash was involved one way or the other as part of that deal. But that trade seems a little lopsided because Bundy immediately went to the main event of the next WrestleMania against Hulk Hogan. But Adrian Adonis was not bad either, when he went with the adorable gimmick starting in January of 1986, and it was just a much better fit for him with Jimmy Hart. Link would almost immediately disappear, so if you think of it as a baseball trade, I think of Link as a pitcher thrown in on a deal who ended up needing Tommy John or rotator cuff surgery, and you never really heard from him again. So another person who was dealt twice by Heenan was Hercules. And once on the way in, Hercules' contract was purchased from Slick by Heenan. And this was recalled on a Saturday night's main event in November of 1986, as a few weeks before that, there had been a cash deal between Heenan and Slick where they were hammering out the details and Slick insisting on cash only, as was his character's style. And the exchange is made, and what happens there is Hercules is all of a sudden in the main event against Hulk Hogan. Because, of course, in the background, there is a Bobby Heenan-Hulk Hogan feud going on, which will be its own segment coming up later. Don't worry about that. A couple years down the road, Hercules is floundering a bit because Heenan has brought in other people who are now above Hercules on the totem pole within the Heenan family. So Bobby sells Hercules to Ted DiBiase to be his slave in an interesting maneuver. And I don't know if he got money from DiBiase for this in advance, but he got rid of Hercules at about the right time. So he timed it perfectly. As I've mentioned before, it's the old Branch Rickey adage, who was the general manager of the Brooklyn Dodgers in the late 40s and early 50s and helped integrate baseball with the arrival of Jackie Robinson in 1947. Branch Rickey said, "It's better to get rid of a guy 1 year too early than a year too late." And so it was with Hercules. Another guy is Ken Patera, who was a huge part of the Heenan family very early on in the WWF after Heenan arrived in September of 1984. They teamed up with Big John Studd and cut Andre's hair on Championship Wrestling in late 1984, and they were feuding with Hulk Hogan, almost cutting his hair as well, before Big Jim, a.k.a. Hillbilly Jim, from the crowd, ended up making the save. And then Patera, of course, had that little incident with the McDonald's, which actually took place when he was in the AWA, and he ended up going to jail for it, which did not seem like it was entirely expected. So he goes away for nearly 2 years and comes back shortly after WrestleMania 3, and Heenan has a remarkable angle with Patera where they have a debate on TV on the May 2nd, 1987 Superstars, which was not exactly a fair fight, putting Ken Patera in there in a battle of wits against Bobby Heenan, where Heenan said the line, well, why don't I just play it?
All you ever concerned yourself with was pressing weights, and all you're good for now is pressing license plates.
That debate is on YouTube, but not the entire thing. If you want to get the entire thing, which is between 7 and 8 minutes, you'd want to go to Daily Motion. And very early, I don't think it's Heenan's opening statement, but I think it's the next time that he's allowed to speak, there's a long period where it is bleeped out and a little scroll runs across as saying it is so heinous that it's being censored. When in actuality, as is my understanding, Heenan read something from the judge of Patera's case from the sentencing, and they felt that that was a little too real for what they were going for. So by censoring it, you create the heat by it's so bad that we can't even show it to you. So kind of like the old Big Red X that they used to have back in the day. But of course, dropping Patera was, you know, because he had nothing left at that point. Although the truth is that he probably would have been better off as a heel. It's just that there was no room in the Heenan family of that time. And then, of course, there is the Red Rooster, which was such a brief thing. Terry Taylor, he just didn't have it after about 1987. It wasn't just the gimmick. I just think he didn't have it. And the fact that him with Heenan, they probably didn't really have huge plans for him anyway. He was the lowest guy in Heenan's family of wrestlers. But that was something used to create an angle for primetime like that, with Gorilla Monsoon taking a bump, which he hadn't done, I don't think, since his retirement, and he wouldn't again until the Vader angle later on. Of course, there's also Heenan and Paul Orndorff, who had a wonderful dance back and forth. Orndorff firing Heenan on two separate occasions, which makes you wonder why he brought him back. Well, it's because Heenan equals instant title shots. Fired him the first time on Tuesday Night Titans, as I had referred to in the show a couple of weeks ago, and then after returning in 1987 from the arm injury, he fired Heenan after he had been pretty much replaced in the family by Rick Rude. And Rude is in that class of guys who were elevated by being with Heenan, at least in some way. Rude was elevated to the intercontinental level, and even though the Ravishing One didn't particularly care for Heenan as a manager, which I think has more to do with Rude's personality, just being a real prickly sort of guy who only wanted to be with certain types of people or whatever. Mr. Perfect was also elevated to the IC level for good, being paired with Heenan shortly after WrestleMania 6. And that was a good marriage because Perfect is coming off the feud with Hulk Hogan prior to WrestleMania 6 that did terrible at the box office, so he could have stood to have some rebuilding, some touch-up work, some renovation on Mr. Perfect. Things were not quite so perfect. And then a pair of tag teams come to mind. The Islanders, who were kind of a babyface, you know, tag team that really wasn't going anywhere and didn't really have much personality because neither guy was going to speak on the mic and sell any tickets or anything like that for all of Haku's real-life toughness and all that. Having Heenan come in and be the manager for them was something that definitely worked, considering that Heenan didn't even have a tag team in his family and hadn't since the duo of Studd and Bundy broke up the previous fall when Studd left the WWF. And then, of course, in 1989, the Brainbusters, when they had come in actually in late 1988, pairing them immediately with Bobby Heenan was just a match made in heaven, because you think of Heenan, if he was on the other side, if he was in Jim Crockett Promotions, that he would have been the manager of the Four Horsemen, not J.J. Dillon. Everybody kind of thinks of Heenan as a cut above J.J. Dillon, and that's not taking anything away from Dillon's abilities as a manager. I've grown to appreciate him as well over the years. But Heenan, you felt like, would have been that guy on the other side, so it was only fitting that when Arn and Tully jumped to the World Wrestling Federation in 1988, that Bobby Heenan was paired with them to give them instant credibility to the new audience. And, you know, there's so much more, and he, you know, there was the little thing in WCW where he wanted to coach the Four Horsemen. I don't really want to get into that. He retired in 91. He had the Barbarian. That was another one before I sign off on this topic. The Barbarian was acquired by the Brain from Mr. Fuji shortly before WrestleMania 6. And I believe I've gone on record a couple of times saying that it was perhaps a missed opportunity to maybe heat up Barbarian as a challenger for Warrior or Hogan down the road if they had taken the time to build that. Because he was certainly big enough and agile, and he could have represented some sort of realistic threat. And pairing him with Heenan, the guy who instantly lifts guys to the world title level, it seems, it just made all the sense in the world.
I managed Bob Remus as we went down the back roads in Peoria, just laughing, knowing our wives would never believe we were riding with four fat girls taking us to the airport so we could save $20. He says to me, if this car flips and we're dead, they're never going to believe us. Then he said, Bobby, stop it. You've made them all laugh, and they've only got seven teeth. And that was counting us.
The Brain was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2004, in that initial class after they took an 8-year break between 96 and 04. And there were a lot of inductees that year. There was Jesse Ventura, Greg Valentine, Tito Santana. A lot of them because WrestleMania was held at Madison Square Garden. It's in New York, so they brought in as many people, I guess maybe, to make up for lost time. And Heenan, of course, is a no-brainer, if you'll pardon the term, for induction in that first class. And his speech is certainly one of the greatest ones that's ever been given at the WWE Hall of Fame, which can be a bit of a mixed bag if you've watched the shows live on the network in the last few years. And Heenan's one, even as he was struggling with his voice because his cancer was still relatively fresh in the minds of everyone at that time, having only occurred for the first time a couple of years before that. And by the way, that reminds me, one of the most reprehensible things that I've ever seen in my life was the complete asshole who on July 4th weekend last year, and I remember this because I was in Chicago for a wedding, who posed as Bobby Heenan on Twitter and was taking questions from everybody and all that, and it actually ended up working some wrestlers themselves, and then it was exposed as a fraud by Bobby Heenan's wife. And that's, it's literally one of the worst things I've ever heard of a person doing online, because there was a reason why that would have been such a big deal to people if Heenan had been on Twitter, because he had literally lost his voice, one of the greatest talkers that we ever knew. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get off track, but I had to get that off my chest. His Hall of Fame speech is not only from a WWE perspective one of the best, it's one of the best Hall of Fame in any sport that I've ever heard. And, you know, you don't really think of what people have to say at the Hall of Fame. People remember Ted Williams at the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1966 because he was the first to call for the induction of great Negro Leagues players who had been ignored by the Hall up to that point. And there have been others along the lines, you know, basketball, I can't remember a single one other than maybe Michael Jordan's "screw everybody who ever doubted me in my life" speech, which is what I think that was about. There's certainly never been any hockey ones that anybody can remember. The one I would compare Bobby the most to, and this is somewhat fitting because this guy is also a WWE Hall of Famer in the celebrity wing, is Bob Uecker's speech at the Baseball Hall of Fame. I can't remember what year it was, but he was being given the Ford Frick Award. And much like Heenan, who was up there for about 15, 20 minutes or so, they let Bob Uecker just go and tell stories in a way that only he and possibly Bobby Heenan himself possibly could. And Heenan talked about his entire career. He kind of went through chronologically and made sure to pay tribute to some of the men that he managed through the years.
To manage it and everybody they threw in front of me in the WWE. Oh, excuse me, would I say something? Wait, let me do this now. You want to talk about wildlife? When I came here, they had the three Freebirds. They had the Junkyard Dog, Mad Dog, two Bulldogs, a guy with a Matilda, another dog. There was a Junkyard Dog, you had insects, you had two killer bees, you had serpents, you had a guy with a snake, you had a Hawaiian guy with a lizard. I'm not done yet. And you ready for this? And to top it off, I'm the Weasel doing commentary with the Gorilla. Damn it.
Now, it's entirely possible that Heenan went into that knowing that he was going to say WWF, a phrase that was verboten in 2004, and then had that line thought up. But the way it came out made it truly sound like he had genuinely made a mistake. And then out of that mistake, he brilliantly spins that story of all the wildlife that was taking over the World Wrestling Federation in the late 1980s. And really, just from the sense of a comedian, he's incredibly brilliant. Never mind being a guy for promos or a manager or any of that. As a straight-up stand-up comedian, he could have rivaled really anybody just on the basis of his quick wit alone. He would have killed in like an improv troupe. I mean, if he goes to the Groundlings, he ain't going to need no training. Guy had an eighth grade education and was able to spin anything you threw at him into comedy gold.
I'll tell you what he's doing here with me. He's sick and tired of you and what you stand for. Let me tell you something, Hogan. You're the one that for 3 years as world champion used this man. You're also the vermin that made this man. I can't tell you what I think about it. You used him. They gave him a trophy. But no, that wasn't good enough. It was a littler trophy than yours. But you had to walk out and steal that moment. You're so jealous of this man, you can't stand it. This is the man for 15 years that is undefeated. But did you ever once?
No, man, you're wrong. You're wrong. You're wrong.
In setting up the format for this show and pondering what I was going to say, what kind of segments I was going to have here, I created separate segments for Bobby and Andre, the Giant, and their saga, and then the Heenan-Hulk Hogan saga, which lasted even longer, years even after Andre's death, all the way in to WCW days. But I feel it's appropriate to mix the two of them because of WrestleMania 3, drawing a crowd that, well, whatever the hell the number was, it was an astronomical crowd to the point where they would show it off in the opening signature of primetime wrestling for years and years to come. And you have Hulk Hogan, Andre the Giant, and Bobby the Brain Heenan, who is right there on par with both of those guys, because who do you turn to instantly make Andre the Giant a beloved figure for nearly a decade and a half at that point, to turn him into the most reviled heel in the company? You just send Bobby Heenan out with him, have him walk out on a stage next to Andre the Giant, and bam, all of a sudden you have your money match. And he has such an extended history with those guys, dating back to even the AWA in 1982, when Heenan was working in handicap matches as a wrestler with Nick Bockwinkle and others, with Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, when Andre was still permitted to work in other territories on the other side of things. And Heenan was a real nemesis for Hogan during the entire time in the AWA, because Hogan could never capture the title through shenanigans and whatnot against AWA champion Nick Bockwinkle. And that feud would, of course, carry over into the WWF, starting from day one with the whole idea of we're going to have Heenan manage the challenger for Hulk Hogan right off the bat. Originally intended to be Jesse Ventura, but then it turns into Big John Studd. And that would evolve over time with other guys who, as I've mentioned, like Hercules goes from Slick to Bobby Heenan. Instantly is main eventing against Hogan on Saturday night's main event. King Kong Bundy goes from Jimmy Hart to Bobby Heenan. Bundy is all of a sudden propelled to the main event at WrestleMania 2 with the great angle from Saturday night's main event, breaking Hulk Hogan's ribs to set up that cage match. Heenan taking the bumps after the match at WrestleMania 2 was also kind of a memorable scene as well. You don't think of it so much as wrestler X or wrestler Y versus Hulk Hogan. It's Bobby Heenan and Proxy versus Hulk Hogan. So really, he's on that level with Hulk Hogan. Yeah, he's not making the charismatic speeches. He's not posing in the ring. He's not selling all the merch. But Hulk Hogan is created in large part because of Bobby Heenan's efforts.
You want to talk to somebody? You talk to me. He's going to do all his talking in the ring. You talk to me. You want to talk about the final chapter? I'll be glad to talk about the final chapter. The final chapter in the life and history and the career of Hulk Hogan. See, because it's over, Hogan. I know it. You know it. Everybody knows it. You had 3 good years. You can't laugh at that. You were lucky. You made some money. You got a cartoon. You got some dolls. You rode good. You had it good. But you know you can't beat this man. Toughest man in the world. Nobody can beat this man. You think with all that blonde hair and a bunch of little Hulksters out there and behind you, you ripping that T-shirt off and shaking in your pythons, you think you can beat him, dummy? It can't be done by you, 10 guys like you, or 100 people like you. This is the next heavyweight champion of the world. Get ready to swallow it, Hogan. It's all over.
Heenan's pairing with Andre the Giant had a certain quality of, if you can't beat him, join him to it. For Heenan was at war with Andre for almost as long as he was at war with Hogan. Really, from the moment he stepped in, because when you're managing Big John Studd, your natural opponent is Andre the Giant. And shortly after Heenan comes in, one of the more famous Andre angles of all time is when Ken Patera and Big John Studd beat down Andre the Giant after dispatching of SD Jones, who Andre had inexplicably decided to team with on that episode of Championship Wrestling. And they knock Andre out and cut his hair, something that seemed entirely like beyond the realm and was something, as a kid watching on a Coliseum tape, that I couldn't believe that that had happened, that they cut Andre the Giant's hair. And they were able to get heat out of that for a really long time, doing the thing with carrying Andre's hair around in a little baggie to show to the people. That's always good for getting heat in good old-time wrestling, is when you cut a guy's hair and, as if that's not enough, you take the guy's hair and you put it in a bag and you carry it around like it's a trophy. So it leads up to WrestleMania 1, the Body Slam Challenge, where Studd and Heenan, Studd, before Heenan got there, was offering $10,000 for a body slam, and $15,000 was what it was up to when Heenan showed up. And nobody could do it, so Andre kind of de facto puts up his career at WrestleMania 1. It's not the greatest match in the world. It's more for the sheer spectacle of seeing Andre in action at the first WrestleMania. He slams Studd, as everybody expected. He takes the money in the famous image that'll be played forever. For as long as WWE is around, that image will be played of Andre the Giant throwing the money out to the crowd, and Bobby Heenan running in from behind and solidifying the, as if there was any doubt, the Weasel nickname by grabbing that WWF little tote bag or whatever it was, gym bag full of money, and then running off with it and keeping the money, presumably, for himself. And that feud with Andre and Heenan would last for months and months. You'd have King Kong Bundy breaking Andre's sternum in kayfabe in late 1985, when the big man was in need of another break due to his deteriorating health. You get past WrestleMania 2, and you run that angle where Heenan gets Andre suspended for no-showing a tag match against Studd and Bundy, so that Andre can go away for a little while. He did come back as the Giant Machine in a wink-wink arrangement there, which only infuriated Heenan, and is some really good television from Bobby Heenan there. While the Machines in the long run might not have been a successful act, they were over for a pretty short period, and I certainly enjoy their music, something that I'll get into when I cover an episode of WWF 1986 that they are on. But Heenan was so infuriated by the fact that it was clearly Andre the Giant and that nobody would believe him, to the point where somebody suggested that it was Giant Baba, even though they have two completely different body types, and Andre actually spoke on more than one occasion. And that was really the last you would see, or I guess not see, of Andre behind a mask, because he rarely made appearances with the other two machines, Big Machine, Blackjack Mulligan, and Super Machine, the masked superstar, and then, of course, later, Axe from Demolition, Bill Eadie. And then they get really, really interesting with the angle where Andre is reinstated, and Heenan is played off as he's too embarrassed to talk about it, and he changes the subject every time it comes up. And they think that it's because Heenan is embarrassed that Andre got reinstated. But of course, what they said was that Andre did not attend the hearing, but Bobby Heenan did. So somebody who could do a little detective work and could really think things through would say, why is that? But yet still, it was such a great shock when the Brain walks out on that Piper's Pit with Andre in tow, and they are a team together for the next 3 years, save for that period where Heenan sold the contract of Andre to Ted DiBiase, although Heenan was not very far away during that period of time and would be back with the Giant right after WrestleMania 4, which would continue along through Andre's really deteriorating in-ring work and just deteriorating health in general, to WrestleMania 6, where Andre was barely a part of the match, and then afterwards slapped Heenan around, or more accurately, paintbrushed him, as he famously whiffed on one of the slaps and throws Heenan and Haku off the cart, and Andre rides off into the sunset in his final televised match in the WWF. Of course, Heenan was not done with Hogan by any means, although the Heenan-Hogan thing had pretty much run its course by the middle of 1988. They kind of unfortunately for him, shifted Heenan onto other guys, such as the Ultimate Warrior, with the weasel suit matches that he had in mid-1988, which is so interesting to me. And I brought this up on an earlier episode. I believe it was June 1988 Superstars, episode 24, where it was kind of an angle just run on primetime where Heenan was so cocky after beating Coco Beware at a MSG house show, and then before that at WrestleMania 4, that he had an open contract and neglected to look and see that he would be facing the Ultimate Warrior, and he did face him in a series of weasel suit matches. And while Warrior did not exactly take the greatest of care with Heenan in the ring, that didn't stop the Brain from, in other areas where he's not with the Warrior, bumping like an absolute crazy man for a guy who suffered a broken neck earlier in the 1980s and would eventually suffer injuries that would lead him to basically have a no-touch deal, where when Brian Pillman grabs him by the back, he says, "What the fuck are you doing?" But the Hogan thing would carry in to WCW in some ways. Heenan jumps to WCW in early 1994 as a broadcaster only. He's not doing any managing, and he's working on a variety of different shows. And Hogan, of course, shows up in the middle of 1994, debuts at one of the Clashes, and then has his first match at Bash at the Beach, wins the title off Ric Flair. And Heenan, of course, is the perfect foil as a heel commentator against Hogan, to speak out against him, because it's practically like a bodily function to the Brain. He's been doing it for 12 years in two other promotions. So as time goes along, you have Heenan as an announcer, and he's gotten a lot of criticism for his WCW work and the fact that he may have mailed it in. But honestly, the culture of the place that he was working, I can't fault him for anything he did there. you know, whether he drank before Rode Wild, you know, God knows there's been enough outdoor parties that I've been to where I've had too much to drink. So I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna kill him too much for that. But there's still some fun Heenan stuff, even as late as 95 when he's doing Uncensored and he's constantly saying, "It's Uncensored," which we now know from the Tony Schiavone podcast was something that they were saying in kind of jest, knowing that things were actually censored on that show in a very real sort of way. And if you flash forward to Bash at the Beach, 1996, and you have Hulk Hogan walking to the ring, Heenan has faced criticism for saying, whose side is he on? And I am of the opinion that when he said that, he clearly didn't know what the angle was, so he's not spoiling it in any way, because they didn't tell the WCW announcers what was coming. They would often not tell them of finishes and angles to elicit a genuine surprise from them. And Heenan had been so anti-Hogan for so long, that is the most Bobby Heenan thing he could have said, is whose side is he on? So really, that's kind of my defense of him during that time. Yes, it was not his greatest work. Yes, he certainly missed working with Gorilla, which, believe me, I'll be getting to that in a second. But Heenan and Andre and Hogan, he is as much, in my opinion, as those two guys, responsible for drawing that house in Pontiac, Michigan that day.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacetoBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceOfNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
It's impossible to think about Bobby Heenan's commentary career without thinking about Gorilla Monsoon at the same time, because they went together like lamb and tuna fish, or spaghetti and meatball. Maybe you prefer that one instead. Those two guys teaming up on Primetime Wrestling with the sax solo that's playing underneath right now, and Wrestling Challenge. And the funny thing about it was, they were not the original hosts of either program. Although Gorilla was on Challenge, the first set of Challenge tapings in 1986, the co-hosts were Ernie Ladd and Luscious Johnny V alongside Gorilla Monsoon, which, thankfully, that got switched over for the fourth week of Wrestling Challenge at the end of September 1986. To the Gorilla Bobby duo that we would know and love all the way up to 1993 when Jim Ross would take over for Gorilla Monsoon. You had Bobby with other guys along the line too. He was with Vince McMahon, and of course, I would be remiss if I did not mention Bobby's performance at the 1993 Survivor Series, which was kind of his farewell as the angle to kick Bobby out of the WWF, which was ably done by Gorilla Monsoon at a Raw in December of 93. Bobby's performance in that Survivor Series was something else, and that was a pay-per-view that I actually got. The only pay-per-view that I actually ordered between 1992 and 1997 was the Survivor Series that year, because it was held in the Boston Garden, and I was very curious to see how the building was going to come off on TV, since it was pretty old and decrepit at that point. And Bobby was a complete tour de force during the Hart Foundation match, ripping on Stu Hart, ripping on Helen Hart. And for any other announcer, that would be the funniest they ever wore. But not for Bobby Heenan, and I'll get to his greatest performance in a little bit. So on Challenge, it's Gorilla and Bobby. So even though it's the B show, it's entertaining just for those two guys and the banter that they would have back and forth. So you're not seeing the best they have to offer, but you're there. You come for the commentary, and the commentary is enough to keep you there. Now, as for Primetime, that show launched at the beginning of 1985, and the hosts were Jack Reynolds and Jesse Ventura. And when Jack Reynolds left in the middle of 1985, he was replaced by Gorilla Monsoon. So it was Gorilla and Jesse for a period of about 7 or 8 months until Jesse left shortly after WrestleMania 2. You don't see those episodes on the network, though. The primetime episodes that are there on the WWE Network in the Vault section don't start until April 26, 1986, which is Heenan's first episode. And even then, he was, I guess, quote-unquote, subbing for Jesse Ventura, because I guess they were holding out hope that maybe Jesse would come back and be a part of the show. But it was not to be, and while I love Jesse as a commentator, and I don't want to really rank him against Heenan, because I prefer them in different times. I like Jesse when Jesse is announcing, and I like Bobby when Bobby's announcing. I would not want Jesse announcing the Royal Rumble in 1992 or 1993 or doing WrestleMania 8. I want Bobby in that slot, but I want Jesse in the earliest slots because, of course, Heenan is managing at that point. And on prime time, they were able to do so many kooky, wacky things. And this is due kind of in part to one of the producers at the WWF, Nelson Swegler, who, according to the Bruce Pritchard Something to Wrestle With podcast that was done on Primetime Wrestling, where Pritchard occasionally would make on-air appearances in 1988 as a producer eating a piece of cake for Bobby's anniversary in April of that year. He talked about how Swegler liked to go on location with stuff, and apparently they had some sort of budget for it. So they would go to places like old Tucson, Arizona. They would go to Atlantic City as kind of a tie-in with WrestleMania. They would go to Caesars, to the movies, to promote No Holds Barred, all sorts of different stuff. And Bobby would play a role. And when they would do the Wild West Shootout in old Tucson, he's there, you know, basically showing ass the entire time and looking the fool as only he could do. It's the bickering between Monsoon and Heenan. The chemistry is just so good on those episodes of Primetime Wrestling. I want you to do me a favor. Raise your hand if you've ever put on an episode of Primetime Wrestling, whether it be YouTube, Daily Motion even, or the WWE Network, and you fast-forwarded through the matches to just listen to the Gorilla and Bobby segments. Yes, my hand just shot up right now. I know this is an audio podcast, but believe me, there have been more than my share of times that I've just decided to skip that Pedro Morales match from 1986 so that I could watch Gorilla and Bobby just have a general back and forth about the machines or whatever else was going on in the WWF at that time. And they, as I said, they would have angles. You had Gorilla taking that bump from Steve Lombardi in 1989 and Heenan apologizing for Gorilla getting involved. That wasn't supposed to happen, but it did. And then, of course, in 1989, the greatest year of Heenan's career, at least in the WWF, and even you could say from a broadcasting perspective, because primetime is just so eminently watchable for that entire year. In the middle of the year, at the end of Primetime Wrestling, they carved out 30 minutes for Bobby Heenan to do a show called The Bobby Heenan Show that was reminiscent of Tuesday Night Titans, but was basically a 30-minute variety show filled with the most absurdist comedy you would ever find. And this is something, again, from my 10-year-old perspective, I would watch it, and I was wondering why I was continuing to watch this bad guy manager hosting a show, because it was just endlessly entertaining. And yes, part of it was when he had the porn star on there who stripped for him. That certainly held some appeal for me. But I'm going to save a lot of my thoughts on the Bobby Heenan show, because for a while now, I've been planning to do a special on each of the four episodes, some of which are on the WWE Network. But actually, the 89 primetime stop at around the middle of that run. I think it might be after episode 2. Out of the four Bobby Heenan shows, the porn star was actually on the last one. And I've said it once and I'll say it again, I can't believe that they got away with doing that, even though it was on at 10:30 at night on cable. When Heenan was hosting that show, Roddy Piper was brought in to be the co-host with Gorilla Monsoon. And what they would do is they would have Heenan in one studio and Piper in the other, and they would have a war of words with each other. These two great top 10 talkers of all time just bickering back and forth. And it was really just so unique. And it is out there on YouTube, and just any sort of simple search, you can find videos that are up to 20 minutes long that are just Heenan and Piper bickering back and forth. And of course, they would actually be broadcasters together down the road at the 1991 SummerSlam. Now, primetime wrestling eventually evolved into other things from Gorilla and Bobby just behind a desk talking to each other and doing shots on locations and stuff like that. It eventually became the infamous studio show with Vince wearing his crazy Zubas pants and Bobby basically reprising Ted Knight's gimmick from Too Close for Comfort when he was wearing those sweatshirts that had various colleges and Bobby would walk out with College of the Pacific on there, the same way that Ted Knight did in the mid-80s on that TV show. And that was always kind of a weird deal, those little prime times. I would always wonder about the people in the studio audience there. I don't know in retrospect whether they were just employees of the WWF who were forced to stay around, or what I like to imagine is the poor SOB who's a broker at UBS just up the street, Stamford or Greenwich, wherever that office is, just off I-95. He makes six figures, great money for 1991, and there he is stuck taking his 10-year-old kid to this wrestling program that's recorded in this studio that was extreme, somewhat hit or miss at times. You would sometimes have Vince hosting, you'd have Sean Mooney hosting. It really kind of depended on the episode. Maybe someday they'll go up on the network, I don't know, but they seem to want to hide those prime times and the 1992 version with the round table that is okay. You have Mr. Perfect and Heenan as the heel representatives on one side of the table, and then Vince as your moderator at the end of the table. And on the other side, you'd have a hodgepodge of baby faces, such as Hillbilly Jim, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Sergeant Slaughter, even Reverend Slick would show up from time to time. And I'm not so crazy about that format, and neither was Vince, because they did away with it fairly quickly and then moved on to a little arena show called Monday Night Raw from the Manhattan Center in January of 1993. And they had mentioned this on the Our Vantage Point podcast. It might have actually been in the Facebook group, actually, a short time ago before the Brain's death. Wouldn't it be great to have something like primetime wrestling where you just show house show matches and two guys talk back and forth? And while I love the idea in theory, the problem with that is any time you would try something like that, immediately your funny man would be compared with Bobby Heenan. And there's just no way in hell that that person, whether it be a Corey Graves or whoever else WWE might want to dig up, there's no way we freaking hold a candle to Bobby the Brain Heenan. There's just no way.
I am completely disgusted with you. All we can show is the back half of this new set.
Looks great, don't it?
The front looked great, too, but I understand you broke another piece of it.
I didn't break it.
You didn't, huh?
It fell off the truck. The thing's on wheels. How am I supposed to know the thing's on wheels?
Brain, I've just about had it with you. You know, you can only take so much, and I've had it right up to here with you. Look, isn't that lovely? Well, the front half is even lovelier. And we could have showed it here had you not stuck your nose in. Take your tools. Do whatever you want to do. Next week you'll be here all by yourself, because I will not be here. I cannot take it anymore. I want you to either make up your mind, resolve yourself that you're either going to keep your hands off things that don't concern you and just do what you're supposed to do out here. Otherwise, I will not be back ever. This is it for me. I'm
wait a minute. Wait a minute. You can't. Come here, Monsoon.
I'm not leaving this either.
He thinks he's going to stick me here next week with this incompetent staff and a busted up set he probably broke. I'll find where he's going to be next week. I'm not staying here either. Get the hell out of here.
Before I get into the last segment, which is about the greatest month of commentary that any professional wrestling announcer has ever had, just want to sneak in a few quick plugs here. You can reach the show with any feedback on this program at GF Allentown Pod on Twitter, facebook.com/greetingsfromAllentown, and Gmail at greetingsfromAllentown@gmail.com. So, the month of January 1992, Bobby Heenan, now granted, some of this was probably recorded in December or whatever, particularly the episode of Challenge that I'm going to cover, and I'm rehashing old ground here on Greetings from Allentown, going all the way back to episode 5, which was before I was part of the Pro Wrestling Only feed, so you can check that out on my SoundCloud. I may remaster that show at some point because the audio was a little wonky at times because 5 episodes in, I didn't really know what I was doing yet. It was the first Gorilla and Bobby show that I covered, which was Wrestling Challenge from January the 12th, 1992, which is famous for one big reason, and that was the barbershop segment with the Rockers, Shawn Michaels, and Marty Jannetty seemingly wanting to hash out their differences. And while that would be a great segment on its own for what they did there and the breakup and all that, it is completely enhanced by the commentary of Bobby the Brain Heenan, who is doing the thing where he's kind of hedging to both sides and then claiming to be right all along, and then capping it all off with one of the funniest things that you will ever hear on a weekly wrestling television program.
They need each other, you know that.
Sounds fair to me.
He's not going to walk away.
They need each other.
Tag team specialists.
See, one without the other isn't any good.
Oh, I knew he was going to do that. I just knew he was going to do that. He don't need Jannetty. I told you that off and on.
Are you kidding? What a despicable act that was.
Jannetty tried to dive through the window to escape. Did you see that?
Are you blind?
What an act of cowardice!
And 1 week later, as if that's not enough, at the Royal Rumble, now everybody knows about his performance in the Royal Rumble match, and I'll get to that. Oh, believe me, I will get to that. But what's often forgotten is earlier in the show, and it's probably best that this is forgotten, somebody had the bright idea on a show with a Royal Rumble match that was so sublimely booked from start to finish to book a Bushwhackers match that ran 17 minutes that was interminable. But it is somehow rewatchable because of Heenan's commentary making fun of Jameson, who of course was his sidekick on the aforementioned Bobby Heenan show that he was saddled with there. And, you know, in the Rumble match itself, it's not just the psychotic cheering for Ric Flair from start to finish and just being a total advocate. And I enjoy when a heel commentator is advocating for certain guys like Jesse Ventura with Rick Rude. And there are other examples over time. But he was so hilarious during the match, which can't be denied by anybody, but he was also making sure to stay within control and would put guys over as they were coming to the ring. Classic example being the Berserker. Now, the Berserker comes out and you think, well, you know, whatever. He's not a threat to win the match. But Heenan makes sure to mention right off the bat, what's this guy's specialty? Pick him up and throw him out. His finishing move was literally throwing guys over the top rope. So it would plant that seed that, hey, this guy is a threat. And he wasn't out for himself during this match. He was not selfish in any way, but still hilarious as all hell throughout the entire thing. And there's really no way I could do it justice. This is a match that I watch probably six times a year. I watch the 92 Rumble match more than any other thing. I wrote a blog about it a couple of years ago, and that wasn't enough for me. I had to go back and write a post at section309.com earlier this year, basically suggesting that that match was an episode of This Is Your Life for Ric Flair, because I took every other person who was in that Royal Rumble and connected them to Ric Flair in some way. I think I missed on two of the guys in the match. Like, I couldn't find a connection between he and Hercules and he and Nikolai Volkoff. And no, I didn't say Hercules teamed with Paul Roma, who was in the Horsemen with Ric Flair. I wasn't doing that. I was like, Ric Flair was in a match with this guy at this point in time. So it's just an amazing match from start to finish. And I know that there's a thread on Pro Wrestling Only that was asking the question of what was the best WWF match between WrestleMania 3, which would be Savage Steamboat, and WrestleMania 10, which would be Bret versus Owen. And in that time frame, my extremely non-conventional answer, and I haven't posted in the thread yet, and I probably will in the next couple of days, if I haven't already by the time this show drops, the 92 Royal Rumble, despite not being a traditional match, was so good and so enjoyable and so rewatchable from the perspective of in-ring, booking, psychology, the title is on the line, commentary. It's one of Gorilla's better performances too, even though, you know, he kind of, you know, Gorilla's not perfect by any means, but Heenan lifts him up by just being so over-the-top hilarious during the entire thing. And I don't know how I can possibly do Heenan's performance justice. So what I'll do to close out the show, instead of the usual Billy Joel send-off that I have each week on Greetings from Allentown, what I'll do is a series of Heenan clip quips from the 1992 Royal Rumble match, set to some music in the background. We'll have WCW Saturday Night from June 1992 coming next week. We're pushing it back a week because of this. So do tune in next Thursday and enjoy.
Best presents in Noriega.
Oh, yes! Damn it! That's Ric Flair! Did you hear what I just said?
What?
You talking to me?
Let Sags do all the work. Over the corner and rest. This isn't fair to Flair! This is not fair to Flair! Back off, Rick. Let Haku do the kicking. Flair's perfect! This isn't fair to Flair! The roof's starting to spin. I'm getting dizzy.
Perfect! Get out here! Kiss your meal ticket goodbye!
Shawn Michaels is making guacamole out of El Matador.
He is not!
Look at the tights, they're green!
Barbarian doesn't like Flair.
Barbarian doesn't like anybody. When I managed him, he barely liked me. No silver, no bronze today. It's just all gold, Monsoon. The best way to win this, you come to the ring, and you carry a wrench. A big crescent wrench.
I told you, no one ever has drawn at numbers 1 through 5 and been there at the end.
Shut up! Shut up!
Well, things are pretty rough right now over there for those Russians.
Too bad.
I think it's fair.
Not the Flair. I gotta go to the ringside, Monsoon.
Oh, you're not going anywhere. You stay right here. Do your job.
Hercules goes right after Flair. What's wrong with you, Hercules?
Maybe he remembers how you treated him.
Flair wins it! Flair's the champion of all! Flair wins it!
What? Are you kidding? There's a lot more guys! A lot more still to come!
So long, Flair.
No, you don't know where he's at. It's definitely not fair to Flair. I never thought I'd say this, but thank you, Roddy. It's a kilt. It's not a skirt. It's a kilt. Well, you no-good creep. You skirt-wearing freak. It's not a kilt. It's a skirt. I'm soaking wet. I know, IRS. I know what he's doing. He's calculating exactly how many deductions he's going to have to make. Who's going to audit it? Who's going to have to pay? Oh, this isn't fair. This isn't fair to Flair. I'm not about his tongue. I don't know what I'm saying anymore.
I know you don't.
And Flair goes right after. What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? He's got a death grip around his neck.
Why don't you show some mercy and go down there and throw the towel in?
Down the pipe! Whoa! 2 points! Look at Flair! He's still fighting! Is that a champion, Monsoon?
It certainly is!
Uh-oh, he just tried to lift the Undertaker!
He did not!
Where's Rick? Where's Flair? Have you lost your mind? Are you nuts?
It's Virgil, fresh and hungry.
Who knows how many bags he's going through in the bag
when you stop.
But weasel your way out if you have to.
Weasel your way out.
Do anything. Don't get up, Rick. Stay down.
By the time they get there, another guy will be on his way.
What a great battle plan. That's why Hussein made him a general. It don't look good. It just doesn't look good.
It's the
God, no! Please let him win it. Please. I'm sorry for everything I've done, everything I've said. Please let him win it.
Will you stop begging?
Just let Flair win it. I'll be a different person, I promise you.
All you gotta know, Brian, is that Flair is still there.
All he's gonna do is spit right in your mouth. Oh, no.
Goodbye, Rick.
I'll behave. I'll never do anything wrong again. Just let him stay. I need something to drink. Hey, you stupid. Give me something to drink. I'm gonna kick.
Getting down to the nitty-gritty here in the Royal Rumble.
You know it's not fair to Flair, and he's still in there. Give him the title. That's good enough for me.
No, I'm not giving him the title.
If he wins this, I'll never say or do anything bad again. Where's Flair? Get that camera on Flair.
It is the Warlock.
But you never know. You never know what Tunney in the WWF will pull on you. I told you, the Warlord. I was right. I knew it. I was right. I can't sit anymore. That's definitely not fair to Flair to be there that long. Look at the beef. You wonder where the beef is? There's the beef, pal. Oh, my God. Uh-oh. I don't like the looks of things now.
Put that cigarette out. Put that cigarette out.
I was never so impressed with anything I've ever seen in all my life. Let's give him a big one. Woo!